Maybe Japan as well, and Europe. But I just think that we need to find it. We need to find other ways of driving our economy that don't depend on trade with China. And that means some longer term thinking, what that means.
I mean, I definitely do agree that sanctions should be in place on China, but is there like a type of, I would say there are countries that are kind of scared to go up against China because China's like a pretty powerful country. Do you think that various countries, like especially Western countries, because they like to talk about how they care about human rights, so why can't they stand up to China despite everything? Like, why can't they just like, I don't know, tell China straight away?
Yeah, well, I mean, China is a very powerful country. It's, in terms of its economic force in the world, both as a market and as a producer, it has been the factory for the world, and that is changing. Like, the production is moving to other places. It's beginning to move to other places like Vietnam or Bangladesh. If we would be willing to pay more for our fast fashion for our consumer goods. That might even move more quickly. I think Western governments, middle powers like Canada, the government is mostly there to, secure the economy, make sure that the economy is stable, that it's growing. And so the political will of like standing up to China is sometimes not there. And some of this is, about domestic politics as well. Like, what the Liberals ran on in Canada was economic strength, and so if they are then turning to human rights as being their primary concern, which of course they would say it is, it has always been, they would say it's our core value. But if it's too core, then I think that would open up them to a lot of criticism, and would make the stability of the regime suspect, perhaps. So that's I think the cost benefit sort of things that they're weighing and when they're making some of these decisions. The sanctions that the 100% tariff that China put on canola was because Canada was standing up to China in the past, and now it's saying, "Oh, we're not going to stand up quite as to the same degree." And so, I think Canada has already seen some of the cost of what it would mean to stand up to China, and now they're saying, "We did, maybe we went too far." That's the message I think that China's getting from this.
I mean, would you call China kind of like a regional bully, especially in Asia Pacific, especially with the way they're threatening Taiwan and repressing minorities? Is that like behavior of a bully, you would say?
I mean, China is pretty aggressively expansive in how it's looking at the world. A lot of it is driven by domestic concerns. So, the economy is stagnating in China. They kind of built everything they needed to build in China. They have an oversupply of both workers and capital. And so that means that they need to go out into the world. They need to invest everywhere else in order to kind of keep the economy going. That's why they decided to make electric vehicles at the scale that they have. It's not just for Chinese consumers, it's for the world because they can. And so that outward look, outward demand in order to keep the domestic economy and domestic political situation stable. Makes them act like a bully. I'm just saying, like, it's not as though they're like saying like we're gonna bully you. It's like there's an economic incentive for them to do what they're doing, and like that's probably the primary driver. And then it comes across as bullying, and it literally is that. So like at the United Nations, like countries that are now dependent on China for trade, especially in the global south, they know they can't cross China. They can't vote against China because that will affect their trade relationship with China. And so there is like real leverage, which is, I guess, the leverage of a bully. They don't like, they bully people kind of behind the scenes. It's not the same way that Trump is doing it, where he's like yelling at people, yelling at countries. It's Xi Jinping can, I mean, we just saw it in domestic politics where he got rid of all the top generals by lifting his finger, basically. He has extreme forms of power. And he should be thought of as a mafia boss who's pretty a Zen mafia boss or something.
And well, I definitely will say that there is I guess a double standard with the way I guess Western countries, approach human rights concerns, because they kind of I guess they are aware of China's human rights violations, but they don't really care enough about that.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is also that it's kind of far away. It's out of sight, out of mind a little bit. And then there's, lack of knowledge. There's the sort of smoke screen of Chinese disinformation that would maybe allow people to sign off on this and say, well, we went and it looks like things are fine, or it's not as big of a deal as what the, what the journalists or Human Rights Watch are saying. There is absolutely a double standard. I mean, we would never allow countries or a province in Canada to do, sorry, companies or a province in Canada to do what China is doing. We would never, the kinds of human rights violations that are happening in China are, at a completely different scale than what is happening here in Canada or in the US. It is what we did in the past, when during the sort of the height of settler colonialism, when there was genocidal violence towards First Nations people, that's the kind of thing that's happening in China right now. And so, if we are, not supportive of colonialism, if we are not, if we are championing human rights, I think it's a state that we shouldn't be involved with. As much as we can. I mean, it's the economy is very complex and interconnected, and it's really hard to extract yourself. But there are choices you can make even within that complexity.
So, what's happening to Uyghur people? You do agree that there's definitely genocidal intent from China's part? Because I do hear that it's equivalent to a genocide, and that's why I'm wondering.
I mean, proving intent is something that I guess international law, scholars should really, be adjudicating, because they're the ones that can make that determination. We see very clearly, state documents saying who should be targeted, that they're saying 10 to 15% of the population. We see them talking about, what should happen in the schools, which is, removing children from the minority from the targeted group and giving them to the majority. Which is, one of the definitional factors in genocide. So it meets many of the markers of what constitutes a genocide. The main difference is, from some other genocides, is we don't see mass killing, like intentional mass killing. But the basic definition is destroying a people in whole or in part, and when you're destroying their families, when you're eliminating their language, there's destruction happening. So it certainly seems as though they're being intentionally targeted. The state would say, we're just doing counterterrorism. These people just happen to be Uyghur. They just happen to be all from the same ethnic group. They would talk about it as a sort of necessary evil, maybe at worst, or just as standard operating procedure for, they would keep maybe backward people or underdeveloped people.
So I guess my final question would be, in the long term, what would this really mean for Canada if we continue to, I guess, trade with China? And will the international community, ever finally, stand up to China and actually do something about this?
Well, I'll start with the first part of this. I think if we normalize our relationship with China, we are normalizing what China has done and is doing. We're acting as though it's okay, that it doesn't matter, that Uyghur lives, don't have value to us. And there's lots of other people that are being targeted and suffering in China as well, beyond the Uyghurs. It's, many, many reasons why you would want to, not associate yourself with that as a state. So I think we do need to, not stick with the current plan long term. I don't know that the international community is going to ever have the political will to stand up to China, and to really force a change on this issue, or even if they can force a change on this issue. There's so many other things going on in the world that people are concerned with, and people are most concerned with things closest to home. So, if the United States is sort of on fire with political turmoil, people are not going to be able to look outside of that. In Europe, Ukraine is a much bigger issue. What Israel is doing to Palestinians has also taken up a lot of space. And those are just like the sort of conflicts in the world that aren't like the more racialized conflicts of, what's happening in Sudan, what's happening in Ethiopia, where people are also being killed at immense scale, and the world seems completely oblivious to it. So it seems like it's unlikely that people will be willing to sort of bear the cost of standing up to China in a very aggressive way. I think, though, that like there has been some real reputational damage to China through all of this, that like many states are now much more reluctant to work with China than they might have been 10 years ago. And I don't see that changing either. I think people are worried about a future where China is increasingly more powerful. They're just balancing other concerns at the same time.
So I guess another final question I would definitely say is that China also is, I would say, complicit in other dictatorships because they do sell their technologies, like surveillance technologies, to Israel, to Iran, to like basically other states so they can surveil their populations, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of what I'm seeing being done to Uyghurs, at least in the camps, for instance, is what Russia is doing to Ukrainians as they're deporting them, putting them through filtration camps. They're using exactly the same technology. And in Israel, Chinese companies that built these safe city systems and camp systems in Xinjiang are building, the population sorting systems in Hebron, the West Bank. And then, of course, there's, the automated or automation-assisted targeting systems that they use to perpetuate a genocide against people in Gaza. In Iran, they're doing the same. Yes. So, I think China is complicit. It's selling these tools, which are not so different from things you can get from the U.S. or from Israel. The main difference is that they're built at the scale of population. They're cheaper. They're being mass-produced. And they come with other incentives, trade incentives. So it feels as though what we're seeing in China is kind of the future of policing, the future of political systems. And so there is a real threat to democracy that is moving through the world. And China is one of the primary actors there.
All right. Well, I guess that's all I really have. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Yeah, I was happy to speak with you. Thanks for your questions. It was an honor.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you to Xenia and to Darren Baylor, Byler, excuse me, for that conversation about China surveillance and the relationship between our countries and how that might change. Coming up next, by request from Koa, we have Intergalactic by Beastie Boys.
We'll be right back. full steam. Too sweet to be sour, too nice to be me. When on the tough guy style, I'm not too keen. Try to change the world, I'm a plot and scheme. Mario C likes to keep it clean. Wanna shine like Ace of V. Fun rapping, cause that's my dream. Default, stick it to me.
Intergalactic by the Beastie Boys here on Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Hope you're having a good hour. We're going to hear a little bit more local music here by a local band that's blowing up right now from a record called Station on the Hill, which is what we are. This is Station on the Hill by Computer, who just got a cease and desist for using the name Computer. So maybe next time I play them, they'll have a different name. Anyway, this is Station on the Hill.
Feel
Station on the Hill by Computer, from their record Station on the Hill, for now titled Computer. We'll see what happens as they resolve their cease and desist with another alleged artist named Computer. Anyway, this has been Speak Up. I'm Jesse. Thanks for tuning in this hour. Thanks to Senya and to Darren Beiler for that interview. Democracy Now! Is coming up next, and after that we have a whole great afternoon slate. We got Beats and Eats, we got The Art Show, we got Free Voices, we got Call Me Negotiator, we got Garen's Open Mic, we've got Analog Archives, The Art Show, etc., etc., etc. So stick around, and I'll see you next time. Thank you.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.